shine a little over. Glimmer, glimmer, lead us less too far. We wonder, love's sweet voices calling yonder. Shine a little over. Glimmer, glimmer, hey there, don't get dimmer, dimmer. Light the path below above and lead us on to love.
Good evening. Welcome to As the Worm Turns. This is KVNF's gardening show. My name is Jill, and tonight I'm joined by special guest Wind Clearwater. Hi, Wind.
Good evening, Jill.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
You joined us maybe a couple months ago on the show, and we talked a little bit about your specialty.
Back when there was still gardening happening.
Right. Well, there's still a lot of thought going on about gardening right now, and
there is.
We want to tap your brain and see what's happening. And this is a call-in show, so I'm going to invite our listeners to...
Uh-oh. So I'll be on the spot.
Yes, you didn't know there was so much pressure involved, did you?
No advance questions. Just kidding, folks.
527-4868 or 1-866-KVNF now. And your specialty, I know you don't like the word expert, but you do have a lot of knowledge about permaculture. And to me, that goes hand in hand with sustainability.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. You know, I kind of cringe at the word sustainability these days.
Oh,
but
really?
Well, yeah, because, you know, actually, I looked up the definition of sustainability, of sustainable, at least, before I came in, because I kind of wanted to get a good solid idea of what that word actually means.
Right on.
And I feel like, you know, that word's tossed around a lot these days.
Absolutely.
And it's not that it's a bad word, but I think that as human beings, it's difficult for us to really fit within the mold of what actually sustainable is.
So what is sustainable?
Well, let me read these definitions. I've got a couple here, and we can select which ones we think might actually apply to human living.
Okay.
Sustainable, definition one, which is first, it's an adjective. Capable of being supported or upheld as by having its weight borne from below. I like that one. Definition number two, pertaining to a system that maintains its own viability by using techniques that allow for continual reuse. Now, that's a good one, and I think mm-hmm. that's the one that most people would apply to permaculture or green living or whatever.
Or when they hear sustainability, that's sort of what they're thinking.
Exactly.
I think so too.
The last one here is capable of being maintained at a steady level without exhausting natural resources or causing severe ecological damage. And that
I like that one too.
That's mm-hmm. a great one. And I think that these are good frameworks to strive towards. However, I find it difficult to actually fully apply the word sustainable to human civilization. We're immersed in such consumption, and we utilize so many things that by default are going to end up being garbage. Let's be realistic.
How long can it go?
How long can it go? Exactly. So even if we become more sustainable, that's the term I like to use, more sustainable than we are, we're still going to be creating things, plastic, namely, that mm-hmm. is going to be very difficult to reintegrate that back and reuse it, as is in definition number two here.
Right.
Continual reuse. Although I think that we could, with our technology, begin to apply more reuse of things into our system if we were more conscious of how we used things.
Well, there you go. It's all about raising that consciousness and knowledge level.
Exactly.
Enlightening people.
And for example, I like the movement towards using biofuels that are made from oil that we've already extracted and used once for something.
Sure.
I'm not really too into growing crops for that purpose because that to me is not really actually very sustainable. But considering how much stuff is grown for oil already and used to fry French fries or whatever, to take that and create that into a useful after product is actually, I think, more sustainable.
Sort of like taking us from this disposable thought process to thinking, what else can I do with this?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And permaculture certainly uses that mentality. How can we utilize the resources that we already have at our hands, that we're already extracting from the earth? How can we let them be multi-purpose? We don't just use them once, we use them many times. And there's also more of a mentality of creating tools and products that last a lot longer. And that in itself is much more sustainable. We're not just tossing away something because it broke and going and buying a new one.
Right, exactly. Maybe sharing a little bit with your neighbors, using a tool that they have that maybe you don't have. Just simple things.
Simple things.
Like that.
Like that. And I also like the idea of reusing our shopping bags and things like that.
So on a big scale.
On a big scale.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been reflecting a lot about the community here on the Western Slope and the amount of resource that we have that we're not actually tapping into to actually that we could be utilizing.
Being what?
Well, for example, I've been taking part in this project here at a local orchard where we're actually beginning to utilize the ground space underneath of the fruit trees to grow other crops.
Okay.
So that's one resource that I recognized as, okay, here's ground that right now is growing weeds that we don't really utilize, even mm-hmm. though some of those weeds are very useful. And actually fetch quite a high price in the herbal market as far as dandelions or chicory, things
sure.
like that
sure.
are already growing, that we could actually utilize those, harvest them from what is already considered a certified organic field, and drying them and starting to sell that as a product. Meanwhile, we can also incorporate other things into that understory that will... actually be another viable product, such as culinary herbs or tea herbs or asparagus or various other things that like that part shade environment.
Right. So you're utilizing the whole space.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of just growing one crop, for example, peaches, which we all know in this area, we don't always even get peaches or cherries. Some years they're frosted out, so we still have the trees there. We still have weed whacking to do. We've still got irrigating. We still have pruning.
Right.
There's a lot of labor involved with no harvest.
Mm-hmm.
We're beginning to incorporate other things in the understory that will guarantee at least some harvest. And then the years that the cherries and peaches do produce, there's even more abundance in that area.
Right. Great example.
So mm-hmm. there's many facets to this. It's not only creating diversity within the agricultural system there, it's also creating diversity in the economic system. And in addition to that, it's also creating diversity in the community because it's bringing together different people who
sure.
have different specialties, and they're all working together in the same space.
Right.
So not only is the ground being maximized, but the water that's irrigating that space is also being maximized
Very
as
important.
Well.
Very important. Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, as we all know, the bees are a big issue. So we're bringing more food to that environment for bees to sustain as well. Because oftentimes the bees will kind of run out of food once the flowers have blossomed and
right,
they're done.
Right, right. So you're kind of giving them some assistance, which, as you say, they need our help.
Exactly.
Need our love. Absolutely.
Exactly. And that brings in more diversity of insects, more diversity of birds. And it's also, it's beautiful, you know?
It's beautiful.
The cherry trees bloom and the peaches bloom, it's beautiful. And then they're kind of done and they're still beautiful trees, but there's no flowers. And we all love flowers.
We do love flowers.
I mean, I think. Can I speak for everyone on that? We all love flowers.
Yes.
Yes.
Woo.
Yay to
Crowd
flowers.
Goes wild. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Why don't you call us and tell us if you love flowers?
And which flowers you actually love.
527-486-8166. KVNF now. We have operators standing by. All right. So we kind of question whether or not humans can really develop and maintain truly what is sustainable, but we want to take steps in that direction.
Mm-hmm. And through permaculture, what we do is we observe the natural world because
right.
that is a system that is truly sustainable, obviously. The integration of all plants and animals and, you know, the insects, in addition to how the air flows and how the water flows and how the earth heaves and thaws. All of these things together make a system that is sustainable. And so when we observe that and we take those patterns and we bring them back and we apply them to our overall site developments, whether it be our backyards, our neighborhoods, our towns, master planned communities, or full cities, or the entire country,
any size,
we're going to create a system that's much more sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really think about it, there's so much resource out there right now that we could actually capture that energy and reintegrate it into our lives, and instead of just throwing it away.
Sounds brilliant. I'm going to go to the bottom of the scale and just our backyard garden kind of thing, because I think for a long time people have been conditioned to see a beautiful garden somewhere or in a magazine, and it's like, that's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they try to create in their backyard. And permaculture is saying, well, what do I have?
Right.
And how can I optimize that, be it the hills and the way the land moves or where the water comes from and shade, sun,
exactly
how your exposure sits, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. The key to good site design is observation.
Right.
And, you know, if you think about it, a long time ago, or not so long ago, really, but, you know, a little over 100 years ago, even in our own valley here, there was a lot of thought put into the development of this community,
mm-hmm.
and most communities, out of necessity. People didn't have the tools that they have now as far as big machinery and things. So they wanted to maximize their energy potential by saying, oh, well, this is where we can create an orchard that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so there was a lot more thought to that. So really, these principles that we apply in permaculture are, a lot of them are actually ancient techniques.
Observation is an ancient technique.
Yes, exactly. It's one of the most ancient, right?
Key to design of life.
Right, truly, right?
Absolutely.
So, and, you know, I went down to Mesa Verde a few years ago, and I witnessed how the Anasazi had actually done exactly that.
Sure.
They built their homes in these caves, basically, in sheltered areas where they were protected from the elements. They captured water and they channeled it all by hand into large reservoirs where they would then utilize that water later in the year, just as we still do now. Right.
And, right. Yeah.
And they also gardened in these little arroyos, where they would terrace the arroyo with stone that was local, and they would create flat spots. So when it did rain, the water would be captured into these little flat areas, and that's where they grew their food.
Right.
So there was all this observation that went forth, because obviously they're working with animal bones to dig and whatever, you
and
know.
Little or no water. I mean, really have to figure that one out.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so in conjunction with that ancient ideology with our modern technology, we really should have absolutely no problem whatsoever creating a much more sustainable lifestyle for humans on the planet.
Sure. You know? Just takes a little thought, and maybe everybody should just go out in this great open space of Western Colorado and just take yourself back to a time when, you know, maybe you were a Ute Indian or something,
right,
and just observe the land as it would have been and put yourself back there. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it's interesting. I've been teaching permaculture design courses for about the last 5 or 6 years, and everyone walks away from them and saying, wow, I can't look at the world like I used to anymore.
Uh-huh.
Now everything I look at, I go, well, why are they have all that lawn there, and why aren't these people collecting rainwater, or you know, they see the world in a different way. And I
right.
think it's
possibilities.
Yeah, potentials, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a relearning of something that's actually instinctual for us, really.
Sure.
Because
absolutely,
really, as humans, I do believe that our job as humans is to steward the planet.
Mm-hmm.
It really is what we're doing here. And so we've kind of strayed from that in a
mm-hmm.
bit. And so
but instinctively we are connected
absolutely.
To the earth. Absolutely.
Right. And that is, in my opinion at least, mm-hmm. that's our role
right.
here, is to kind of be the conductor mm-hmm. of nature in a way.
Right.
We're not here to take everything away, I don't think at least. We're here to help to integrate and help to encourage, you know, and that's mm-hmm.
that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it really mm-hmm. is. I think there's been a real movement towards forcing nature to be something for us.
Yes.
And if we step back and allow nature to be itself, we just encourage it.
Mm-hmm.
We can give it a little bit of love here when it needs it, or a little extra of that or something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and unfortunately, we've kind of taken many steps backwards to where we've now done so much damage to a lot of the simple things in life, as far as topsoil and water quality and things, that we've kind of actually got to step back and go backwards a little bit and kind of help to recoup some of what we've lost in that department.
Oh, yeah. We've got to do some remediation.
Exactly. And that's another yeah. big part of permaculture, is actually doing
sure.
remediation and seeing what, you know, another great example of that was I worked out at Solar Energy International a few mm-hmm. years ago, and someone had taken a bunch of big slabs of concrete and just thrown it into the creek there that runs through their property. And it was had kind of made a big muddy mess, because it sort of dammed up the water and it was impeding the flow. And we actually went in there and we used a tractor and stuff, and we pulled these huge slabs of concrete out, and we're looking at them going, well, what are we going to do with these things? Well, there was a hillside there right by the creek. And I said, well, let's build a bench here and make it a place, instead of this junkyard that
right.
in the water, let's make it a place where people can actually come and sit. So we pulled it out, and there was enough concrete there that we built this big bench and
nice.
A little patio, and we made steps with all these chunks of what people call urbanite now, which is such a great resource. Concrete,
right?
It'll take forever for concrete
right.
to go away. You
There's
know?
Something you can do with that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most mined resources that we have.
Oh, sure.
More than petroleum, even, is concrete.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it mm-hmm. is. And so when it's used and it's made into these big chunks, it's great. So you can actually, you could build a house out of it if you really wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So this is part of our principles in permaculture, is we're doing several things in one maneuver, right? This is where we conserve our energy.
Mm-hmm.
Is we cleaned the river and we built something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a space for people to go and actually enjoy the creek now. Whereas before
right.
they were like, oh, I don't even want to go down there. It's
right.
just so nasty.
Well, you're kind of letting an ecosystem knows what to do for itself.
Right, exactly. And then we allowed it to find some healing there.
Right,
because the water,
absolutely.
Water
healed.
Does that. You know,
mm-hmm.
water's such a healing force. So, you know, we all have these opportunities, and if we look around our yards and we say, oh, there's this big pile of junk I have or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can actually stretch our brains a little bit and say, well, how can this actually be something that I can utilize? How can this be a resource in my life?
Right.
You know.
And are the people that are interested in permaculture, is that the mindset that they have when they come to your class, or do they know what they're looking for? Are they just curious as to what it is? I mean, who are these people that are opening their minds to this kind of thinking?
Well, that's a great question. You know, it really is a broad spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of younger folks who are looking for something different. They feel
sure.
like maybe going to college isn't really their thing, or they've been in college and they're disillusioned with what they see their future as. And so they're looking to get back to the land. There's a big movement for that.
Yeah, definitely.
But we also have some older folks who, some of my students have been older than me, and which is hard to believe anybody can be that old.
Yeah,
you know, it's nuts, isn't it?
Ancient.
But, and they, you know, some of them have left jobs that they've been in for 25 or 30
mm-hmm.
years, and they're looking for something else as well. So,
do you think that's an instinct calling?
I do.
I do, too.
A certain level of that,
the
for sure.
Mother Earth is calling.
Absolutely.
Hey, Wind, we have Tara on the line. Tara from Paonia. Hi, Tara.
Hello, Jill and Wind, thank you so much for continuing this, because a lot of us are still thinking about gardens and how to leave them.
Yeah.
And that's my question. Actually, we have a little marital dispute conflict about this.
Oh, this is a lot of pressure.
I don't really want to air that now, Tara.
We're now counselors.
What it is that Sam has heard on this very show about not having mulch, that's just a good place for bugs to overwinter, and that leaving bare ground then makes the soil warm up more quickly in the spring, and so you can plant sooner, like that. And then I'm having all these advice about you want to do these layering and have it protected and kind of warm so that the microbes can work all winter and not be all frozen and dried out by what might happen over the winter. So I would like to hear what Wind has to say about the permaculture recommendations.
Well, I feel on the spot here now. I mean,
spot.
I don't want to take sides.
Oh, well.
So
no,
what I'm going to do, what I'm
so
going to...
I have to translate it.
Oh, he's not listening. Okay, great.
meeting, so.
Well, I'll tell you, once again, I observe nature. And to me, the autumn, what happens? The leaves all fall from the trees, right? And all the herbaceous perennials die and they tend to fall to the ground. That's nature covering the earth. It's putting a blanket down. So I would say that mulch is the way to go in the wintertime. There's many reasons for that. And there's actually some technical reasons that I think I could support that with. But the simple thing is that's what nature does. You always go into the forest. There's never bare soil, really. Mm-hmm. It's always got this little duff of pine needles or leaves or something that have come down. Mm-hmm. They're covering the earth. He's right that it does take the earth longer to thaw in the springtime, but that's not necessarily a bad thing either, particularly here with people and fruit trees. It's the roots warming that tend to bring the sap up from the roots, mm-hmm. and that's what brings the blossoms out. So if we keep the ground mulched around them, they'll actually blossom later than they would if it's totally bare soil. So this could be another great way for orchardists to keep the trees, or at least backyard orchardists, to keep their trees from coming out too soon in the springtime. And you're also taking part of the natural cycle of the earth. When the leaves fall, or if you do artificial mulch, I call it artificial because it's not actually leaves coming from the trees, but you mm-hmm. bring in some kind of wood chips or something, or even straw to put down. Yes, you are harboring bugs. Some of those bugs you might not necessarily like, but some of them are going to be good for the soil as well.
Right. And I think it is maybe a little bit of the quality of your mulch and how that maybe works with your current soil environment.
Yes.
And what can optimize that.
Yeah.
Would that be correct?
Now, you have spoken of mulching around trees and orchard trees, but what about your more open place of the garden, which would be more like a field, I guess, if you were observing nature? In other words, I'm not talking about... Well, that's good too, to talk about the orchard trees, but the garden, the rows of some beds are ready to plant when spring comes.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they're bare soil, and so the question is if we're going to cover them up or not.
Well,
that's different than the tree thing.
It is,
right.
Certainly. That's a great question. So there, a forest garden versus a vegetable garden is two totally different mm-hmm. microclimates. I would still mulch. If you're concerned about the earth thawing in time for your stuff to be able to work the soil and get the seeds planted, you can plant seeds now. And I know Lance does that a lot.
Yeah, some winter crops.
He'll plant his carrots, seeds, and even spinach and things like that. Mm-hmm. You can actually put those seeds in the ground now and mm-hmm. mulch over them. And then in the springtime, when it begins to thaw, you can kind of pull that mulch away from those beds a little bit. And when the seeds are ready, they'll still sprout. The mulch will actually keep the birds from eating those seeds as well. So that's a good idea. Now, the thing about not mulching the soil, I'll tell you, is that the soil will dry out. And if we have a dry winter, you're going to lose a lot of microbial life and a lot of worms. They'll go deeper into the soil. You'll actually even you lose some of that life in the top couple layers
sure.
of the soil. So it's a patience game in the springtime when it comes to mulching. And I think it's actually, for me, springtime sometimes comes a little quickly anyway. So it's not such a terrible thing to let it go an extra couple weeks.
Try to drag it out. Right. Exactly.
Right. I mean, I'm just as eager as anyone else to get into the garden in the spring. But at the same time, when I really think of the big picture, mm-hmm. I know that by October, I'm usually like, oh, phew. Thank
yeah,
goodness
finally,
it frosted. Right.
You know, it froze. So. I can quit this thing.
Right, exactly. Okay. So, you know, in lieu of all that, I'm a firm believer in mulch, especially uh-huh. in this environment. Now, if we were living in the Northwest where it rained as much as it does, it's probably not as crucial and probably not as such a good idea. You're going to create a
major
lot more
bug
fungus,
yeah.
bugs, and mold and things like that.
Right.
So in our environment, yeah, mulch, I'm a firm believer you can't do too much with that.
Okay.
And I'd recommend using straw. If you can get some straw that doesn't have seeds in it,
right.
because otherwise you're planting grass right into your garden.
Right.
Not such a great idea.
Yeah.
Sawdust is pretty good. Leaves, just leaves. If you mm-hmm. can get bags of leaves and just pour them, that would be the most natural thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's another good one. Wood chips can be hit or miss. If it's shredded wood, it tends to actually do a little bit better. The wood chips, I'm not really sold on those. They don't break down quite
yeah.
as readily.
It takes a little long time to break
it
down. Maybe it's the dry climate.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's part of it for sure.
I might tell your listeners a little something which I thought was very strange, but anyway, about bugs is I cleaned up a little pile of wood weathering that was next to my garden, not far from where I had planted my squash this year. And the bark was all loose and fell off. And under the bark, I found squash beetles, stink bugs,
right.
trying to winter over in that bark. So, yeah, kind of wondering
bugs
about
bugs are in survival mode right now.
To
right.
find actual stink bugs, like, alive right there.
It's pretty crazy,
anyway,
isn't it? I know. They're tough
little
buggers.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your
call,
Tara.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, so
boy, I'm glad Sam wasn't listening. I don't, you know, it's tough. You don't want to choose sides there in a kind of domestic disputes
right.
like that. You know.
Well, and she's right. A lot of people are still thinking about gardening, and
absolutely,
yeah, that is always the question: to mulch or not to mulch?
Yes, it's a big question, and I think that maybe in the future we should talk a little bit about that here on As the Worm Turns about the planting and what we do in the wintertime.
Right.
I know that I just received like 4 or 5 seed and bare root catalogs
yeah.
in the mail, so obviously the nurseries are encouraging that, and it's a really good time to sit down and actually do some of that design work
right.
and do some of that observation, kind of witness where the sun is, where the shadows fall, where the wind is blowing, how dry your soil is. Depends on the wintertime, you know. And
right.
it's been relatively even this year. It's not too bad.
Feeling like it could dry out, but
yeah. It could.
Looks
like it might snow tomorrow. We'll see.
Nice. Come on, Pacific
right.
pineapple or whatever they
right,
call that.
right.
Bring it on.
So, you know, the snow actually is a great thing. So if we get the snow here, that's kind of our mulch.
It is the mulch,
and
keeping it warm.
Exactly.
Yeah, I
and
love
if,
it.
If we get that chill and it stays on the ground until February and then begins to thaw, that's great because you're getting that slow, deep moisture penetrating into the soil. If we don't get it, then, yeah, you definitely want to have mulch because the winter is actually more drying even than the summer, it seems to me. You know?
It's kind of like, you know, right now you could fill up your bathtub and let it sit there, and in a few days it will
right.
be evaporated.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
it's not dry.
You'll have that little mineral deposit all on the edges, you know.
right.
I know my skin feels that way. It's like,
ooh, yeah.
So.
Well, Wind, pleasure having you here tonight
and sharing your
knowledge. And
my pleasure.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to As the Worm Turns. And we'll be back next week. And thanks for listening to KVNF.
Thanks a lot, Jill.
on, you are equipped with taillight neon. You've got a cute vest pocket master, which you can make both slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so, low, little low and low.